Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. Today's story has underwater adventures and romance. It's written by Rosanna M. White, a best-selling Christie Award-winning author who has long claimed that words are the air she breathes. Having successfully launched two homeschool grads, she now spends her time writing fiction, designing book covers, and pretending her house will clean itself. Rosanna is the author of a slew of historical novels that span several continents and thousands of years. Spies and war and mayhem always seem to find their way into her books to offset her real life, which is blessedly ordinary. More recently, she's branched off into the fantasy genre, which allowed me to find this fun short story from her world that blends myrrh and land dwellers. Stick around to the end or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from Rosanna, as well as how to enter our giveaway. For now, please enjoy Captivated by Rosanna M. White. Chapter 1. Bren sent a smirk over her shoulder, ignored the wide-eyed warning of her guard, and put on a burst of speed. A few whips of her tail and a bit of a current she called up with her magic, and she soon outpaced them. They clicked their outrage with the devices on their belts, of course, but it served them right for refusing to don one of the Myrrh's specially designed tails out of principle. Bren liked principles. She had plenty of them. But refusing technology that would help just out of stubbornness or pride? That made no sense. Besides, she didn't need the guards anyway. If danger presented itself, she was more capable of dealing with it than any of them. Not to mention that they'd leave her once she reached the gate to Margarita Civitas and her cousin's security met her. What difference did 2 minutes make? No one else waited to swim into the underwater city through the well nearest the palace, which she suspected was no accident. She had, at Daz's insistence, sent word to Cousin Nerida once Bren's yacht had reached the closest anchor point they were allowed. It was only a 30-minute swim from there, but that was time enough for Nerida to secure everything. Bren opened her senses, searched the waters for any creature of concern, and smiled when she recognized a few magical signatures on the far side of the city. Her younger cousins, no doubt out for training or play. She'd enjoy joining them later. Now, though, she didn't dare abandon her submitted trajectory, and only partly for the sake of her sure-to-be-irate guards. More for Nerida's, who didn't exactly welcome unannounced awakened from Dariatla in her waters, even those who were family. She swam up the well with one last undulation of her tail, calling the water up with her so that she could simply stand on the ledge in the chamber instead of pulling herself out awkwardly with the ladder. Her first vision was of the beautiful blue-green light that saturated everything under the domes of the Sunken Kingdom. Then, a sight just as beautiful, if a bit less welcoming. Atlas stood in the doorway, muscled arms crossed over his hewn chest, his teal uniform tail split into pant legs so that he could stride through the city, but ready to be flicked back together if he needed to swim, and a glare on his face that really shouldn't make her heart stutter. She may still look 25, but she'd already lived 6 decades and was likely to live hundreds of years more. She'd seen her share of handsome men, had even felt the magic of many of them when she awakened it in their veins during the ceremony. But Atlas was the only one that had ever made her stomach tie itself into knots in all those years. It didn't matter how silly it was, or how many times in the last decade she'd told herself to put the handsome guard from her mind. Didn't matter that she reminded herself time after time that he hadn't reacted as she did when their blood mixed. That he'd chosen this, life beneath the seas, instead of life on land. It didn't matter that he'd sworn allegiance to her cousin's kingdom instead of her own. She still felt like a schoolgirl with a tied tongue every time he looked at her. Or, rather, frowned at her. He dipped his head, but the show of respect didn't soften his expression any. Not a good time, Your Highness. Perhaps if his frown was foul-tempered, she could resent him for it. Perhaps that would temper this ridiculous infatuation. But no. His frowns were always so sincere, as if he had only her best interest in mind, despite those vows he'd taken proving otherwise. Thank the skies, decorum was so well ingrained by now, she didn't have to think about it. She pressed the button on her tail that would release its seams and turn it into a skirt, freeing her legs, and lifted her chin. I need an audience with my cousin. He glanced past her, toward the well, and his brow furrowed in that way that always made her want to reach out and smooth it.
Where are your guards this time?
Only a few seconds behind me. 30, if they kept to their current pace, but that knowledge would only make Atlas frown even more. Though I'll dismiss them now that you're here anyway. He shook his head and took a step closer, the alarm in his eyes giving her pause.
No. You need to turn around and go back to your yacht. It's not safe for you here right now.
Not safe? Before she'd even thought about it, water rose from the well and swirled around her. Armor, ready to stop an attack or make one. Whatever was needed. What's the problem?
Unrest, he said, eyes still on the well. We suspect a coup is in process. You need to get back to Dariatla, princess, before—
Is Nerida in danger? Her throat tried to close at the thought. Nothing could happen to her cousin. Nerida was the strongest mer in the seas, her magic unequaled.
Atlas ignored her and stepped closer to the well. I don't sense them. Where are they?
Bren snapped her attention back to the waters, back to the awareness that lived somewhere deep inside. The six men she'd been tracking had vanished. That didn't make sense unless they were no longer in the water. But they couldn't be out of the water. Not yet. They weren't near enough to any well beside this one, and they couldn't have reached the surface again. They'd have to take an hour to do that, stopping to decompress along the way. She spun toward the well, hand hovering over the button to turn her skirt back into a tail.
Your Highness.
A strong hand covered hers, held it there, then tugged her a step away.
You will not go after them. Their job is to protect you, not the other way around.
Funny how she could want to weave her fingers through his and shake him off at the same time. She turned her own glare on him for a change. My job is to protect every Dariatlian citizen. Including him, though he'd chosen to live among his mother's people instead of his father's. Chosen Nerida's court instead of Bren's father's. Chosen the sea instead of the land.
That's your father's job.
Somehow, he said it gently, not with a taunt, not with disdain. Her throat went tight again, but she swallowed past it. Not for long. It came out as a choked whisper. That's why I've come. Atlas stilled, dissected her words, and then his face fell into understanding and grief.
I'm sorry. How long?
She shrugged, mostly as a delay while she tried to clear the emotion from her throat. Hard to say. But he's begun aging rapidly. And his magic grows weaker. It could be a matter of months, or he could hold on for years. When Atlas's eyes flashed like that, she could almost believe he cared. Almost believe that her pain mattered to him. Almost believe that the twitch in his arms was him restraining himself from reaching out and pulling her into an embrace. She knew better. A decade she'd known this man. A decade in which he'd heard her pour out her heart to Nerida every time Bren visited the sunken cities. He'd stood by the door to her suite so often that he knew her habits as well as she did herself. He'd seen her in her own kingdom, her own throne room often enough to recognize any differences she might have in different company. Never once had he made an attempt to overstep the strict boundaries of guardian and royal. Never once had he tried to be her friend. She always tried to be his, though. How is your mother? She knew that Enna had been in poor health for years. Her body, so well suited to life beneath the sea, had not adapted well when she tried to live on land with her husband and son. Surface sickness had forced her back beneath the waters. But even down here, she hadn't gotten well again. Too much damage had been done.
Atlas's throat bobbed. She is at peace now. Her soul returned to the one 3 weeks ago.
Atlas, I'm so sorry,
She reached out before she could think to stop herself, as she would have done with anyone, rested her hand on his wrist. I'll be praying for your family, that the Triada's peace will suffuse you all. His arms went stiff under her fingers the moment she put them there. At least he waited until she had finished speaking before pulling away, turning away. Come, I'll take you to Her Majesty while we search for your guardians. But you won't be able to stay long, for your own safety.
10 years, and still his every rejection stung. She was used to it, though. Able to hide the pain behind her smile, even as she cast a look over her shoulder at the well. She ought to search for her own men. She knew them better than anyone here, knew the disturbances they made in the water. She also knew that if she were to dive back into the sea, Atlas and his soldiers would be after her in a heartbeat. Soldiers that could very well be needed to keep Nerida safe, keep all of the Sunken Kingdom safe, if a coup were really in progress. Sending a prayer skyward to the Triada, she followed Atlas instead, her water armor in place around her. She kept her senses open to the ocean as she walked, still searching for the familiar presence of her guards. They couldn't have vanished. It wasn't possible. The path through the palace gardens was familiar, but Atlas didn't give her time to observe the beauty of the carefully sculpted coral this time. He led her directly through them and into the palace, then straight to the throne room. She expected to find her cousin bent over plans with the captain of her guard, but Nerida sat on her throne, arms resting in the recessed sides that fed salt water to her, straight from the sea. She wore, as always, an ornate crown of gold and pearls on her head, and a gown that would be at home in a ballroom, but which Bren knew for a fact could transform into a uniform and tail with a few flicks and perhaps the removal of the layered skirt. Bren paused when Atlas did, bowed. Your Majesty. She felt the water move before she saw it, sensed the rage in it even while her cousin's face remained calm. It roared not just from the throne, but from the channels that ran all along the room, springing up and toward her. The first time her cousin had greeted her so, she'd been caught completely off guard and wasn't strong enough to have done anything about it, even if she'd expected it. The water had crashed into her, flattened her against the floor, and tried to force its way into her mouth and nose, into her lungs. Bren had been furious, felt betrayed, had been convinced her cousin hated her. It had taken her full 2-week visit to accept that, in fact, Nerida was trying to help her, and to test her. This time, the water didn't make it even halfway across the distance. Bren caught it, halted it. That she could do now without so much as lifting a finger. But her cousin had the advantage, given that she was touching the water in her throne. To even try to counteract it, Bren had to focus. She lifted her hands, pushed them away from her sides to send her command to the water. Back down, she told it. Return to rest. It was probably more her cousin's distraction than Bren's growing strength that let her win the battle. She'd been able to stop its advance for years now, but she had never succeeded in making it return completely to its courses, not until Nerida allowed it. Today, she pushed it all the way back, and didn't know if she should be satisfied or worried. Her brows knit. Are you all right, Nerida? She could still sense the rage in the water. Her cousin sneered. I would be a lot better if I weren't distracted by your arrival. Do you not believe in asking before you invade my territory? It took all 6 decades of training Bren possessed to keep from flinching. The Mer Queen was often testy, never affectionate in the way of Bren's parents, but usually kinder than that. She inclined her head. My apologies, Your Majesty. I didn't know until I arrived that my timing was so poor. Atlas stepped forward. As soon as we locate her guardians, we'll send her on her way, Your Majesty. Nerida twisted a finger, and Bren's senses perked up. There they were, her men, right where she'd left them, but immobile. Then gone again with another movement of Nerida's finger. Bren frowned. What have you done with them? Isolated them. I meant to catch you in the bubble too and send you all home, but you surprised me.
A bit of pride joined the irritation in Nerida's eyes. Well done, little one. Calling a current to aid your speed is a new trick for you. It wasn't, just one she'd never used outside Darialta's sovereign waters. But Bren merely nodded her thanks. Nerida's frown stayed in place. You're stronger, much stronger than you were 3 months ago. She paused, drew in a long breath, and her face cleared. Your father? How was it that Bren could control the brine of the sea, but couldn't keep the tears from stinging her own eyes? He's dying. Oh, little one, I'm so sorry. Nerida rose, strode toward her, and wrapped Bren in a rare hug. When I felt your magic in the water, I wondered. Such an increase in so little time. I didn't know who else to talk to. No one in Darialta could possibly understand, could mourn the rise of power, because it meant the loss of a life she loved so dearly. Nerida probably didn't fully understand either. She hadn't inherited her crown. She'd won it through a coup, probably not so unlike the one she fought now. But she hoped to install one of her children on the throne after her. So she at least anticipated the situation Bren found herself in. The sorrow that would come when one of those children surpassed her in power, and her own began to ebb. The will of the Triada, Da said. The natural order. The way it was supposed to be. It didn't feel like that to Bren. It felt only of loss and pain and fear. She didn't want to rule. 60 years she'd been prepared for it, but still she didn't want it. She would do it for the good of her people, but she was not the queen they needed, not for the long term. Nerida pulled back, none of Bren's water armor daring to darken the fabric of the queen's gown. I truly am sorry, and I will happily pay a visit to you soon, if the one is willing. But it isn't safe for you here now. I would not put it past these traitors to try to kidnap you and use you for leverage against me. The glint in Nerida's eye, the firm line of her lips, made that age-old hurt spring to life in Bren's heart again. Because she knew without being told that Nerida would never choose Bren over her throne. She would let the would-be usurpers kill her before she'd strike a bargain, despite the fact that it could mean war with Darialta. It was her own foolish fault, she would say to Da. I must defend my kingdom, my own children above yours. There would be no love lost between Da and Nerida. Mum had been the one with the blood tied to the Queen of the Myrrh. But Mum had been gone for 20 years, and with her died the carefully brokered peace between the two realms. Well, it held, but barely. Da hated it when Bren came down here, even as he granted that it was likely the only thing that kept them from outright war. That philosophy of mine before yours had never settled comfortably in Bren's soul. Did not the holy writ that both kingdoms claimed as their own say they ought to see to the cares of each other before seeking their own? A teaching for a normal person, Da had said, not a monarch. We seek the good of our people before our personal good. But we cannot seek the good of another kingdom's people before ours. Logic said he was right. But her heart said that in the eyes of the Triada, the One, whichever name you used for the Creator, the Once and Coming One, and the wind and flame that went out from them into humanity, there was no difference between Darialtian and Myrrh, no difference between the subjects of one kingdom or another. The only peace she could find in her own spirit was to grant that she must care for her own people first, yes. But never, never, at the cost of someone else's. She swallowed all of that down now. How can I help? Again, irritation flickered in her cousin's eyes. Not gratitude, not warmth. By going home. You will not involve yourself in Myrrh political squabbling. Bren lifted her chin. But Darialta has a vested interest in you keeping your throne, cousin, in seeing that the ruler of the Myrrh continues to be one such as yourself, who fights for justice and righteousness. The irritation was preferable to the expression that flitted over Nerida's features now, amusement. You are so confident in me, Enough that you would risk your crown for mine? She didn't say fool, not aloud, but it was implied. Bren lifted her chin. You have brought peace and stability to your realm, and by extension, mine. I won my crown through violence, Bren, and have to defend it through the same. Never in all Bren's life had she heard that note of resignation in her cousin's voice. You ousted a corrupt regime. Nerida laughed, though no amusement laced it now. How can you still be so charmingly naive at your age? Bren, every regime has corruption in it, even your father's. It is impossible to avoid so long as flawed, sinful humans are involved. Yes, the history I wrote magnified the sins of my predecessors and the virtues I most value. And these troublemakers now are instead pointing their magnifier at the faults and flaws and weaknesses of me and mine. They are not wrong, but neither are they right, any more than I was when I took the crown 75 years ago. Bren stiffened. She was not naive, just because she wanted to cling to the good. Nor was she blind to the faults in her own kingdom, in her father's reign. She wasn't ignorant to her own weaknesses either. She simply believed she could strengthen against them, work to fix the problems. That was hope, not naivete. But thinking she would find comfort and direction here, that was foolishness, to be sure. Heart heavier than it had been when she left the Tidal Palace, she turned to the exit. I won't distract you any longer, cousin. My apologies. Wait! Bren's heart leapt, and it wasn't because the pivot had brought her face to face with Atlas, who'd hovered silently behind her throughout the short exchange. Then it crashed when the queen said, Take an hour to eat and rest before you leave. You'll need to be at top speed when you go. I'll send your men back to your yacht, hidden from the magic of my enemies over that hour. That way you'll be able to hurry when you go. Atlas?
Yes, Majesty.
See my cousin to her usual chamber, then return for your instructions. In typical fashion, he didn't so much as glance at Bren, just saluted, turned, and led her away.
Chapter 2. Atlas closed the door behind the princess and put the water lock into place. Though he didn't know why he bothered. It might keep the enemies out, but it wouldn't keep the princess in, not if she took it into her head to argue more with the queen. Princess Bren would be able to unravel his magic in about 10 seconds. And she was the wild card here, as always. The Myrrh he could understand. Their thought processes made perfect sense. It was why he'd been able to ferret out this latest scheme so quickly. Power. That was what it always came down to among his mother's people. They would grab for it, protect it, steal it, usurp it any chance they could get. But the princess? She never did what he expected. Never, not once. It confounded him every bit as much as it enchanted him. He strode back to the throne room, not at all convinced she wouldn't follow him, but more than a little relieved when each check of his lock told him it was still in place. Perhaps, this once, she'd do what Her Majesty had instructed. It would be a first. But she was full of surprises. He re-entered the large chamber, shutting the doors behind him when Queen Nerida motioned for him to. She sat on her throne again, and Atlas strode to the base of the dais and bent a knee.
Your Majesty.
She sighed and motioned for him to rise.
This is not my preferred timeline, Atlas.
He kept his gaze focused on her eyes as he stood again.
Agreed.
But I see no way around it. You are her best bet of reaching Darialta again safely.
It was a compliment to him, but an insult to her cousin. Atlas felt the muscle in his jaw tick as he bit back the words in the princess's defense that sprang to his tongue. Only once he was certain he wouldn't say something foolish did he dare to open his mouth.
I will do whatever you command, Majesty.
One last time, you mean?
Her mouth pinched. She hadn't been happy when he'd turned in his resignation, even though he'd declined promotion after offered promotion over the last 10 years. He'd never wanted to be here, never wanted to serve this monarchy. He'd done it solely because training was training, and he needed to be close to his mother, to care for her.
I suppose I can't accuse you of shifting loyalties. You've always made it clear where yours lie.
He inclined his head at that truth. Darialta is the home of my youth, Your Majesty, the home of my heart. But as I swore to you a decade ago, I have served you well in all things that did not offend that first loyalty.
Which had made him the perfect guard to assign to the princess's detail whenever she visited. Torture, that. Blissful torture. She grew only more beautiful every time she came, and somehow kinder. Truer. Gentler. How did she manage it, when every other royal he came into contact with did the opposite?
Queen Nerida let out another huff of breath.
I hope she knows the treasure she's getting. I could have made you great, Atlas.
I do not wish to be great, he said, though softly, gently. I only wish to be home. And
he hesitated, not sure how much to volunteer. But he'd made truth his byword, and that meant more than just not speaking lies. It meant not withholding.
I have not applied to be a guardian yet.
The queen scowled. Don't tell me you mean to take up fishing like your father. If I've wasted a decade of training on you—
No, Your Majesty.
He didn't usually make it a policy to interrupt the queen, but time was short.
I do intend to apply, but I didn't expect her next trip to come so soon after the last.
And, he could admit it to himself if no one else, he was afraid to take that final step toward all he'd dreamed of. Because once he did, they could say no, turn him away, leave him dreamless. It could well be the will of the Triada. He knew that. If they took him into the Royal Guardians and gave him the posting of his heart, near the capital city, it wouldn't just mean easy access to his father. It would mean protecting them, the royals. It could well mean more interactions with the princess. Exactly what he wanted, and what he most dreaded, too. More sweet torture. Or the Triada could instead will him to be sent to a far outpost. He had no way of knowing, but he would trust. Trust that once he took a step in obedience, he would be led where he was meant to go. Lips still pursed, the queen brought her desk over to her with the use of the hydraulics installed in it and recorded something onto a blue data crystal. Atlas stood at attention while she worked, knowing better than to ask if he was dismissed or otherwise interrupt her. A minute later, she snapped the crystal from its reader and tossed it to him. He caught it, waited.
A recommendation, she said, voice flinty. I can't guarantee they won't think you my spy, in which case this will only make it worse. Use your judgment in whether to present it or not.
Thank you, Majesty.
Recognizing the dismissal in her nod, he turned.
And Atlas?
He paused, turned back. Yes, Your Majesty.
Keep my cousin safe. I cannot afford a war with her father right now, even if he is weakening. Consider it your last task for me.
Atlas bowed. It will be my honor.
He headed straight for the barracks this time, his stride quick. He'd never brought much with him to his quarters in the palace, so packing was finished in minutes. Saying farewell to his friends among the royal guards took a bit longer. But despite their exaggerated moans and denials, he knew none were surprised that he was leaving on such short notice. They'd all known he was only among the Myrrh for the sake of his mother. They'd all known after she died that he would leave the first chance he got. They just thought, as he had, it would be several months yet. When he'd resigned, Queen Nerida had not been pleased. She'd tried bargaining with him to stay, and the compromise they'd reached was that he would remain until her cousin's next visit, then return to the surface with her. She'd wanted to make it seem like a gift to the royals of Darialta, gifting them one of her best soldiers. He knew very well that she'd intended to make it seem like he was a spy for her, one her cousins couldn't refuse without offending her. He'd refused, said he would accept the timing but not her scheme, which they both knew was designed to make things miserable enough for him above that he'd return below. He could only pray they wouldn't still think it now, still doubt him. The hour the princess had been charged to wait was nearly over when Atlas strode back to her door. The lock either hadn't been tampered with, or she was talented enough at doing so that he couldn't detect it. He unwound the water from the mechanism and then knocked.
Enter,
Even her voice was enough to make his pulse increase, which was ridiculous. He was 29 years old, not an adolescent with his first crush, and she was leagues above him in every way imaginable. He entered, bowed.
"Ready when you are, Your Highness."
His gaze tracked to the tray of food that had been waiting for her when he locked her in. She hadn't eaten all of it, but enough. He nodded. Her gaze went straight to the strap over his shoulder.
"Why do you have a bag?"
Geysers. He'd assumed he wouldn't have to broach the subject until they reached the surface. But maybe this was better than just hoping she'd let him onto the royal yacht.
"Forgive me for my forwardness, Your Highness. I ought to have asked before I assumed, but I was hoping I could ride with you back to Dairy Alta."
He'd done it before, to visit his father, and she'd said he was welcome to any time, but he shouldn't assume she meant it. Even though he knew well she'd never recant an offer of hospitality, it wasn't in her nature, generous to a fault. And true to form, she gave him a soft smile.
"Of course you may."
Then her brows drew together. "Was he able to come for the funeral?" Atlas's throat went tight. He shook his head.
"He tried, but the pressure sickness struck before he was halfway here. He had to turn back."
She fisted a hand and settled it over her heart, tears welling in her eyes.
"I am so sorry. It breaks my heart that they couldn't be together."
He could only nod, emotion too thick in his throat for words. It had broken all of them, the tragedy of his parents' incompatibility with each other's worlds. His mother with her surface sickness, his father with pressure sickness, and him, burdened with the knowledge that trying to keep their family together for his sake would result in early deaths for them both. Well, not only for his sake. They'd loved each other, to the last, even when they couldn't be together. The princess's frown didn't lessen.
"I'm surprised my cousin is willing to let you go if things are as volatile right now as they seem."
He swallowed past the emotion, put it carefully away.
"I am not in any command position. My leaving will not affect her much."
True, he'd been the one to root out this latest conspiracy, but he'd turned all the information he'd gathered over to his captain.
"Ridiculous."
Princess Bren planted her hands on her hips. "I know very well you are more powerful than anyone else in her guard could possibly be. I awakened you myself. I felt the strength of your magic. It is a complete absurdity that she hasn't advanced you."
His lips wanted to smile, but he held it back. "It was not Her Majesty's decision, Your Highness, nor my captain's. I turned down several promotions."
He backed out the door, motioning her to join him. She did, gathering water around her again as she came, from the pool of it in the guest suite's antechamber. Confusion stained her expression.
"Why would you do that?"
Guilt pricked his conscience. He'd made it a point to always be truthful with everyone else. But this woman beside him was the one person in the world he'd withheld that truth from, time and again. He couldn't hide it now.
"I never intended to stay here, Your Highness. I only came to the Sunken Kingdom to care for my mother. Now that she's gone..."
Her eyes widened.
"You're returning to Dairy Alta for good?"
He nodded.
"I agreed to stay here only until your next visit."
She faced forward, depriving him of the view of her endless green eyes.
"Will you help your father then?"
Her voice sounded a bit odd, strained, unlike her usual easy tone. Atlas's brows tugged together of their own volition, and not just because he wasn't ready to have this conversation. Why was she distressed at the thought of him moving back to Dairy Alta? Did she dislike him so much? The question gave him pause. She had always been kind to him, yes, though the same could be said of everyone she encountered. But he knew he came off as stern with her, around her. So focused was he on keeping her safe when she seemed only concerned with getting to know everyone. Never mind that half the Myrrh in the Sunken Kingdom considered her a threat, and a tempting kidnapping target. He couldn't apologize for that. Her safety mattered more to him than Nerida's ever had, despite the Queen being his employer. But he could grant it could make her dislike him. Worse, what if she already distrusted him? What if her immediate thought was that he was coming as a spy for her cousin?
"Your Highness."
He lengthened his stride for a pace so that he could angle in front of her, bringing her to a halt.
It would have been simpler to reach out and stop her with a hand on her arm, but Myr guards were drilled to never touch a royal unless it couldn't be avoided in order to keep them safe. Somehow, she made even the unexpected halt look graceful, the arch of her brows look inviting. He wrestled a breath into the lungs that suddenly felt made of iron.
I don't mean to join my father on his fishing boat. I plan to apply to the Elite Guardians. It was always my dream. I only came here first to care for my mother, but I applied myself to my training with the goal of serving Darialta as soon as I could.
She blinked, held silent for a long moment, long enough to make him wonder if she'd rescind her offer to join her on the yacht after all, if she'd declare here and now that a decade of service to the Myr disqualified him from ever joining her guardians. Then, she held out a hand toward him, as if to shake his. "Welcome aboard, Master." It was his turn to stare. Blink. He knew the title she used, of course. He knew the ranks of the guardians top to bottom, inside out. But Master was reserved to the head of each branch.
"I beg your pardon?"
This time the tilt of her brows looked challenging. "My father grows weak. One of the tasks he has given me is to expand my own guard, to choose its head. I have been thinking about it, praying about it, but I didn't know who to trust with the role." He felt like a fish, mouth gaping open with no words coming out. He had to shake his head to clear it, to find his words.
"Why would you trust me with it?"
Her hand hovered there in the air between them, a bridge he didn't dare to cross, much as he yearned to. "I felt your blood in the Awakening Bowl, Atlas. You're strong. Stronger than any other I've encountered in the 40 years I've been performing the ceremonies." He swallowed, letting her words settle. He knew he was strong, yes. The way the Myr Queen had tried to push him into leadership had proven it even more than outmatching his fellow awakened guards had done. Stronger than any the princess had awakened, though? That left a strange buzzing in his ears. Still, he felt the need to point out the obvious.
"Strong doesn't mean faithful."
Her gaze held as steady as her hand. "You have saved my life no fewer than 4 times over the last decade." His head bowed.
"You could have saved yourself. I only helped."
"You saw the threats and neutralized them before I could even react. Was that only for my cousin's benefit? To spare her from a war with my father?" For the first time, something other than confidence entered her voice. Something that sounded nearly like vulnerability, but couldn't be. What cause had she to feel vulnerable? "I always fancied it was because you valued all life, that you would always protect whomever you could."
"I do. I would."
Truth, yes, if oversimplified. He would protect any innocent it was in his power to help, of course. But her? He would protect her to his dying breath, if she gave him the chance. Her chin rose a notch. "Will you protect me on land with the same dedication you've protected me under the sea?"
"Of course."
That didn't even require thought. "Will you protect me with the same dedication you've protected my cousin?"
"No."
That, too, slipped out unfiltered, without thought, and he silently berated himself when he saw a flicker of doubt in her eyes, saw the way her hand dipped. He dropped to a knee, took that hand in his, but didn't shake it, equal to equal. He wasn't that, never would be. He held her hand before him and touched his forehead to it in a vow of obeisance.
"I will protect you with far more dedication, Highness. With every breath, every pulse, every drop of blood, every ounce of power. Give me the chance, and I will serve you till my dying day."
Her fingers curled around his, somehow making the formal vow feel warm, intimate, despite the fact they stood in a private corridor of another royal's palace. "Join my elite guardians, then, Atlas. Be the master of my personal retinue." Gratitude surged, nearly equal to the devotion that threatened to crush him.
"It would be my honor, Highness."
Noise from around the corner brought him back to his feet, spinning to face it. Reality slammed back into him. If he didn't get her out of the palace quickly, he could fail in his first moments of service.
"Come, we need to get out of here.
Somehow, her hand was still in his as they rushed into a side corridor that would lead them to the well. No doubt she'd left it there solely because it kept them close through the maze of passages. But he should have released her. Both hands could well be needed to defend her if a threat leapt into their path. He held on anyway, until they slipped into the well room. He closed the door behind them, through the water lock. It would keep any traitors in the palace from following them out, though it would do nothing to protect them from any coming from the water.
"Can you camouflage us, as your cousin did your guards?"
He'd been practicing the trick, but hadn't mastered it yet. It took an inordinate amount of power to convince one bubble of water to stop communicating with the rest. Water didn't like being separated from its own. The princess frowned. "I've never tried, but I'll see what I can do." As she spoke, she arranged her skirts around her ankles and then triggered the mechanism that would pull them into a tail. Atlas did the same with his pants, and a moment later they both dove into the water, him leading the way. A sweep of his magical senses hadn't shown him any awakened nearby, nor any normal mer swimming in the vicinity. But he did a visual scan the moment he was outside the well. The blue-green glow of the city's dome lit the waters, but it cast its light on nothing but jellies and a school of lanternfish. Princess Bren swam up beside him, moving her hands in a way that he knew was her communicating with the water, not with him. He could feel the sea respond around them, draw close. A few moments later, his sense of the waters beyond their bubble dimmed, nearly eclipsed entirely. Nearly, but not quite. She clearly sensed the holes, too, given the look of frustration on her face. It was better than nothing, better than what he'd managed on his own, and she'd never practiced it before. Not surprising, really. If her father's power was failing, it meant hers had matched his, was growing even stronger. And her father was the most powerful awakened on land. Still, he could see the uncertainty in her eyes, the sense of failure. That wouldn't do. He added his magic to hers, sealing up those few gaps that escaped her, far easier than creating the entire seal himself. The dome light caught her smile. She nodded, held out her hand to him. Practical this time. The closer they could swim to each other, the easier their shield would be to maintain. He took her hand and wove it around his arm, nodded back. They took off toward the surface. Chapter 3. The shield mixed blessing with curse. It disguised them from any awakened mer who might wish to pursue them, yes, but it also cut Bren's magical sense off beyond the sphere she'd crafted from the water, leaving them only with visual checks. Once they escaped the glow of the dome, twilight surrounded them, little to no light reaching them from the faraway surface. If there were mer in the waters, she didn't know it. They wouldn't see her and Atlas either, true, not with their eyes and not with any magical senses. But there must be a way to protect themselves without going magically blind in the process. She'd have to practice this, perfect it. Atlas checked his compass and tugged her a few degrees to the left. Not knowing whether this shield they'd made would be soundproof, she didn't dare communicate with him audibly, neither with the mechanism on her belt that allowed her to send clicks to her own men, nor in the water language of the mer, reminiscent of the calls dolphins and whales used. The light brightened, the darkness faded, the pressure eased. By her estimation, they'd reach her yacht in another 10 minutes. She knew it the moment Atlas spotted the group of mer, the same moment she did. She saw the tridents flashing in their hands even as she felt him go stiff beside her. A second later, he pushed her behind him, putting himself between her and the band of rogue mer. Not before she saw them fully, catalogued all she could about them. They wore the uniform of the Marine Guard, but if these were her cousin's men, they were in violation of the treaty between Darialta and the Sunken Kingdom. No armed soldiers were to be in this zone unless they were escorting an official delegation. But they weren't Nerida's men. Their hair was too long, the shape of their tridents not quite right. They were either deserters, perhaps even traitors belonging to the coup, or thieves who had stolen the uniforms. Bad news either way, and they'd spotted her and Atlas moments after they'd first glimpsed them. Geysers, the shield of water might keep awakened from sensing her magic, but it wouldn't do a thing to shield them from the band's gazes, nor was she willing to bet their lives on it protecting them from a hurtling trident. Atlas made a noise in his throat, followed by a click of his tongue. Drop. On land, that command from a guardian could be an order to drop to the ground out of range, but in the water, that was meaningless. Even as she dismissed it, she decided he meant what she'd already decided to do. She let go of the shield with her water senses, releasing the threads of power he'd woven into hers. Sensation flooded her like sunlight on a spring day, welcome and familiar. In an instant, she knew there were two awakened among the band of 12, could feel their magic probing at where the shields had been. She didn't think, just reacted, pushing her own magic out, not just to slap away the tendrils of theirs, but to push them away. Once, it would have been difficult, given the way they fought back. Once, she would have needed the help Atlas gave. Now, it felt no more strenuous than laughter. Her fingers curled into her palm. She would thank the Triada for the strength, since it meant protecting the people in her kingdom. But she would never stop mourning it. Never. That it meant her father was failing, that it meant that burden was hers. Hers alone. Alone. She felt it more and more with every year that went by. More. Not loneliness. Myrrh. Another dozen. Then another. What were so many doing this close to her territorial waters? Even as she asked, she knew, and dread turned to ice in her veins. They'd known she was here. They were lying in wait, thinking to use her against, who? Her father? Her cousin? Stupid. She'd been so stupid to come like this, without waiting for the proper permission, all but delivering herself into the hands of their mutual enemies. It didn't matter. All that mattered was foiling them. She sent a surge toward one group, another toward the next. Though aware of her every weakness, she no sooner identified one than she felt Atlas plug up the gap, weaving his magic into hers. How did he do it? She and her father had learned to work together, but only after decades of practice. No other awakened guardian had ever been able to do more than reinforce where she told them to, akin to adding sandbags to an earthen wall. Atlas, though, his magic wasn't a wall against hers. It went throughout it, into it. The ocean swirled, churned around them until the separate currents she sent to each group became one. A vortex, a whirlpool, with her and Atlas at the center. The magic of the two awakened myrrh snapped out of control like a rope under too much tension, then faded within seconds to nothing. The unawakened were helpless to fight her current, and she could sense it in the water as each sagged from the force. Their deaths were not her goal, but being myrrh, unconsciousness didn't mean nearly instant drowning, not like it would for land dwellers. While her own subjects would try to draw in breath instinctually upon passing out, the myrrh would instead close off their respiration to hold the air they had inside. It should last long enough for them to wake up. But just in case, she slowed the swirl, let the last of it clump the myrrh all together, and eased them toward the ocean floor and the way station that she knew was nearby, the last one in myrrh territory. Even as she moved the myrrh, Atlas moved her, not with magic, but with a strong arm around her waist, leading her toward the surface. Soon, they broke through. Waves crested and swirled all around them. She hadn't taken the time to keep the surface still as she churned the water beneath it. An oversight she remedied now, calming the waves with an outstretched arm while she scanned the surface for her yacht. There. Atlas pointed a bit behind them. In myrrh territory. No doubt her fault, but she quickly fixed that too, calling up a current just behind the boat to bring it straight toward them. Rather than slow it, she pulled herself and Atlas into the same current and used it to lift them up to the deck. By the time her feet touched down, she already had her tail back into a skirt. Atlas dropped his arm from around her waist, and she felt the loss in her bones.
Your Highness!
One of the guardians she'd evaded earlier stepped forward, worry in his eyes.
Was that you? We feared.
It was me. And she knew she would have to give a full report to her father. Now, however, Bren wanted only to rest for a few minutes. No. No, that wasn't all she wanted. She lifted her chin, telling herself to exude strength for just a few minutes more.
Would you have some refreshments sent to my conference room, Tam? I need to have a debriefing with the new master of my guardians. It was a test, yes, to see how her current staff would react to her promoting an outsider above them. But when she motioned to Atlas, she saw only glints of approval from her men, smiles on their faces. They'd interacted with him plenty over the last decade. They'd trained together, both on land and under the sea, whenever their paths crossed long enough. They'd know what he was capable of. Now, they all clapped their right fists to their left shoulders.
"Welcome, Master,"
the three said in unison. Atlas returned the salute and nodded.
"Good to see you all again. I look forward to working with you."
Tam bowed to her.
"I'll have the cook send a tray up straight away, Your Highness."
"Thank you." She nodded to them, smiled at each crew member in view, and then led the way below decks to the small conference room with its gleaming table and light spilling in through the portholes. The moment Atlas snicked the door closed behind them, she let the facade go and sagged.
"Highness."
Atlas surged forward to support Princess Bren, even though he soon realized she wasn't fainting or falling, just sinking to a seat on the plush bench fitted to one of the interior walls. Given that he'd already reached to brace her, he followed her down, and forgot to pull his hands away when she turned those piercing emerald eyes on him. She was even more beautiful in the sunshine than in the dome light, something he'd forgotten in the 2 years it had been since he'd last seen her in it. "How did you do that?" she asked. She didn't pull away from his hands like he expected her to. No, she leaned just a little closer and angled her knees toward his. "Weave your magic into mine." He tried to tell his hands to move away, but all he managed was to trail his fingertips from her bicep to her elbow.
"I don't know. I just did it."
"Have you done it before? With the queen or her awakened or—" He'd never even thought to. Never tried. He shook his head.
"With them, it always feels like a battle, trying to win the power."
Her face twisted. "Power? I don't want it, Atlas. I don't want to be strong."
"Bren."
Never in the decade he'd known her had her name ever escaped his lips without its honorific. But it slipped out on a breath as his fingers settled over hers.
"They're not the same, power and strength. Power only seeks to control. Strength, though, strength seeks to protect. And that's what you have, what you should have. Why you'll be a queen worth serving, worth loving."
When he'd composed the words in his mind, he'd meant it only as the sort of devotion subjects were expected to have for their kind-hearted rulers. But the moment the syllables settled on his lips, he knew his heart filled them. Knew she heard it, given the way her gaze snapped back to his from where it had drifted. This was where she shouldn't have pulled away, blinked, lifted her chin, pretended she hadn't understood, said something about such devotion being what the Master of the Guardians ought to feel for his sovereign. Instead, her breath tangled up, emotion he'd never dare to name filling her eyes. "I want to protect my people, serve them, and I know the Triada will grant me what strength I need. But—" Her gaze fell then, though her fingers turned to grip his. "I am always so aware of every failing, every weakness, every place my strength gives way." He shook his head, ready to object, but she looked up again, silencing him. "You make me stronger. Together—" Cheeks flushing, she looked away again. Was it possible? The color in her cheeks, the hitch in her breath, the way her fingers curled around his, the way his magic had fit so seamlessly into hers. It took him back a decade, to the day she'd held the awakening blade over his finger and let a drop of his blood fall into the water in the crystal bowl beneath their hands. He'd been dumbfounded by her beauty, this princess older than his parents, but who looked little more than his 18 years. He hadn't been surprised that his blood had made the telltale flourish in the water, given his parentage. Magic only ever came in the meeting of worlds, and he'd wondered, over the years, if perhaps his was so strong because his parents had sacrificed so much for love. When she'd lowered his hand into the bowl, cut her own finger, and sent her blood through the water to awaken the magic in his, already primed from the blade. He'd watched the girl awakened before him flinch at the contact, so knew he'd feel it. He'd braced himself, determined not to flinch, not to show weakness to the princess. It had taken every last ounce of his control. He'd expected a static shock, but it was lightning that pierced him. Normal, he'd thought at the time. Not normal, he'd learned since, as the awakened and the Marine Guard swapped stories. Perhaps he was weaker than most, to feel it so keenly. Perhaps she was stronger than most, though that didn't explain the more muted zap others had felt from her. Perhaps. Perhaps it was them. Together. He echoed her whisper, throat tight. With his free hand, he did something he never even let himself dream of doing. He reached up to cup her cheek. She leaned into his touch, eyes fluttering closed for a moment. She wanted his touch. She must, the way her blood pounded through her veins, an echo of the way his did through his own, which he had no doubt she could sense just as clearly. How long? How long had she yearned for him as he did for her? Surely she'd known he could never make the first move. She was a princess. He, nothing but the son of a fisherman and a teacher. Why have you never said anything? He knew the answer, though, even before she opened her eyes again and gazed into his. Such a beautiful contradiction she was, strong but uncertain, regal but humble. You didn't choose us. Her voice sounded as breathless as his own. Didn't choose me. He hadn't, and he couldn't regret it, for his mother's sake. I choose you now, he said, thumb stroking over her cheek. I choose you always. A spark of humor lit in her eyes, and her lips turned up just a bit. As my guardian? In whatever way you'll have me. She leaned closer, and it was all the invitation he needed. He claimed her lips in a kiss a decade in the making, full of her magic, hers and his, and uncounted dreams. He'd never wanted to be powerful either, despite the strength the Triada had given him, but he wanted to be hers, to give her whatever he could of himself, to lend her his magic so it could strengthen her own. He would be her guardian, her protector, her love, her husband. He would give her everything he was, knowing he could trust her with that. When at last they pulled away, her hand cradled his face as well. A soft smile tilted her lips. I thought I was looking for advice today on how not to feel so alone with the crown. But I don't think Nerida could have told me this, that what I really need is you. It wasn't hers to know, wasn't hers to tell. It's ours, our future. Our forever, she said, and gazing into her eyes, he knew it would be bright. I hope you enjoyed listening to Captivated by Rosanna M. White, narrated by Corinne Norton. If you enjoyed this story, you'll want to check out the first two books in the Awakened series, Awakened and the newly released Aflame. You can find them, along with Rosanna's other novellas, at rosannamwhite.com/fantasy. Another great thing to do if you've enjoyed the episode is to leave a review, which helps new listeners and authors find the podcast, making it easier for me to make more episodes for you. If you're not sure how to leave a review, check out today's show notes for some easy instructions. Before you go, don't forget to enter this month's giveaway with over a dozen books for one lucky winner. You can enter at findingfantasyreads.com/giveaway. As always, I will have links for all those sites in the show notes. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.